The Night Owl Podcast, Episode 32, The Demons That Haunt Us, Part 1. Welcome to the Night Owl Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Ballou, and this is a place for all you restless spirits out there to tune in and hear true tales of the paranormal. I hunt these stories down, capture them from the mouths of those who've experienced them, and share them with you, right here. We're currently looking for more personal ghost stories or haunted locations, so if you or someone you know has one, please submit it to us for consideration. Go to thenightowlpodcast.com, click on the Submit Your Story page, and let us hear your ghost story. I couldn't be more excited about the episode you're about to hear, but I feel it's important to give you all a heads up that in this series, more than previous ones, we touch on several important and sensitive topics, including mental health, addiction, domestic violence, and abuse. The stories, opinions, and healing practices expressed by the subjects or the Night Owl team are not meant to be taken as authoritative or professional endorsements or recommendations when it comes to the causes, interventions, and/or solutions or treatments surrounding mental health, addiction, or abuse. In tonight's episode, a single mother and her children have now reached a breaking point with disturbing paranormal activity in their home. Over the last 7 years, they've experienced voices, knocking, phantom putrid smells, oppressive feelings, shadow figures, apparitions, and even physical attacks that have left family members scratched or feeling incredibly ill. The disturbances have progressed to the point where they no longer feel safe in their home. Thankfully, through the help of a friend, the family was able to flee to a hotel temporarily. However, running out of funds and their dog still at home, the family knows that they must return soon, but fear what might happen when they do. So when I got this call, I knew I had to pick up my mic, rally the team, and see if we could help this family get their home back from whatever was there, keeping them living in a state of constant fear. Stay tuned. A quick call to action to our Night Owl family out there. We're trying to expand our show so we can produce more episodes and travel with our team to new cities and even new states. You can help us achieve this by simply doing the following 4 things. Follow or subscribe to our show on your podcast listening app, give us a 5-star rating, write us a review, and lastly, share your love for the show on social media. We appreciate your support. Late one night in the summer of 2021, I was enjoying a quiet night of reading on my back patio when my phone suddenly buzzed loudly on my tabletop. The light from it was jarring, as well as I'd only been outside with a lantern and a book in front of me. I wasn't used to getting texts this late, so I was naturally curious and pulled the phone closer to me. It was my pal and team member Alexis. He'd simply texted he had a potential new case. Then another text followed his first, stating that this was an urgent one, and we'd probably need to act fast. I was struggling from a recent personal tragedy and had to put the show on hiatus for personal healing. So if I'm being honest, I didn't feel quite ready to dive into an intense case. But I'm a true believer that things happen for a reason. And at this moment, I did feel pulled to hear this one out. So I called Alexis and got the scoop.
Hey, so I wanted to tell you about this girl. She came in, her name is Luna. She came in with her daughter and one of her friends that basically had heard about our shop and who we were on Instagram. And, you know, basically told her, you need to go to the shop and talk to these guys because they can help you with your situation. And Luna basically was just telling us that, well, she had a few things first. First, she's kind of a spiritual practitioner, and she was asking for some advice, especially from Eric, regarding, you know, using certain altars and having things set up in her home. But then the conversation kind of turned a little darker, and she mentioned that she literally had to leave her house because she's had so much activity happen. And she was actually staying with her friend. That's why her friend brought her to the shop. And she said, like, the activity just kind of kept, progressively getting worse and worse and worse. And at one point, she looked at her son, her teenage son, and looked at her daughter, and they basically looked at each other and said, this is like hell. Like, this is, like, we can't take this anymore. And they all kind of agreed. And so that's why they decided to leave for, I think it was like 3 or 4 days. They just could not be home. And they called their dad because he's kind of the one that helped them kind of get the house and put things together. And, you know, and he's a little more, I guess the way she made it seem like he's a little more like level-headed in the sense that like we'll take care of it type deal. So he said he was going to come into town and kind of help out, but until then, they're staying with their friend. And she asked if there was a way we could just like go do a cleansing, and I said yes, we could. I said, but what I think it would be good if we got the team involved, because then it could be a lot more thorough if we can get Sarah in there and you know, we also to kind of go and investigate and make sure it's not just, you know, rats or something, because she mentioned like ugly smells and scratching in the walls and things like that.
Soon after this, Alexis connected me with Luna. I arranged our first call to simply assess what she and her kids were going through and see if they would be willing to let the team get fully involved.
I got your information from my good friend Alexis. One of my team members said that you were having some, you know, unexplained experiences in your house, but they were severe enough to where you had to actually take action and leave the house.
Yes. I've been trying to sort of ignore some things that have been going on, and it's just gotten to a point where I can't. I'm exhausted. I just dropped everything, and I took my kids to a hotel room.
At this point, how long have you been in this particular house?
7 years. Yeah, 7 years.
Oh, wow. This has just escalated recently?
It's like it comes in waves. It seems to be progressively worse as time goes on. I can't function anymore. I'm losing sleep. I want to feel like I'm okay, like my home is my home. I don't feel like I'm alone in my house. My kids are constantly spooked. My son is always telling me that he's seeing things out of the corner of his eyes, and he feels things, he hears things. My daughter sees things. None of us feel comfortable walking around the house after a certain hour. I really, really, really don't like sleeping with my door even cracked open. I always feel like somebody's watching me. It's like a very heavy presence in my house, and I can't see it. And I know that, like, if I just go in the other rooms, like in the middle of the night, if I'm thirsty or whatever, I can go in there. But like, it's so overwhelming. It's like I feel like it's debilitating. And then I feel like this little girl hiding under her covers, because I can't even go to my kitchen to get something to drink because I'm afraid I'm going to see something or I'm going to feel something. My daughter, I have to be sitting in the bathroom with her while she's getting ready to get in the bath. And sometimes my son don't want to come and sleep on my floor in my bedroom because he's afraid to be in his room or doesn't want to be in his room. And then other times he doesn't even want to leave his room and doesn't want to go to any other parts of the rooms. And he's like very depressive, and I get depressive, and then we get into these horrible fights, and just we're so angry with each other. I don't even know why I'm angry or so angry. And then we'll leave the house, and everything will be fine, and we'll be joking in like 20 minutes in the car, and we'll wonder like why were we so upset, and we don't even remember why we got in a fight, and then it gets to the point where we just dread going back home because we know that something's going to like trigger and we'll start fighting again. And it's just like, I feel like it's tearing us apart.
You would say right now it feels worse than it has ever felt?
I've had two experiences that were absolutely terrifying for me. And this one, I was working on my projects and I started feeling this sensation in my head, and I started feeling very, very short of breath. Like I couldn't breathe, and like something like was closing in on me, and I just stopped everything and I went to my bedroom and I just tried to focus, and I just started getting bombarded with all of these sort of terrifying images in my mind. And I know I didn't put them in my head, or I feel like I didn't put them in my head, but it was just like I just kind of cleared my head and I was like, you know, whatever this is, whatever you are, just like talk to me, show yourself to me. Like, I just needed to know. I just needed to understand what was happening, what this was. And I just started seeing all of these like disgusting, like monstrous images in my head. And I mean, the best way I can describe it is it looked kind of like demonic with like these big horns. And I mean, it was very jarring, but I just kind of thought this can't be what's in my freaking house, right? So I just started trying not to panic, and I called my friend and I told her what happened, and you know, she said, "You guys got to get out of there. You know, if there's anything I can do," you know, she said she would put us in a hotel and we could just could get out of the house and just try to figure things out. I just didn't give them any explanation. I just said, "We need to get out of here. Whatever's here is having a really terrible effect on us." And they didn't even question. They weren't even like, "What are you talking about?" You know, they just wanted to go. And my son immediately was like, "I agree, let's go." So it wasn't until we went and had dinner that we were kind of like, "What did we just do? We just left the house. We just left everything." But neither of my children and myself, none of us felt like what we did was irrational. It was like almost like this just huge sigh of relief, even though I didn't know when I was going to go back there. I told them I didn't know when we were going to come back here. I felt like we were going to come back here when we got some sort of answers. So we stayed in a hotel for a few nights, and then my friend let me house sit for her. And so we got like a few other nights out of that. And now I have to go back in there, and I don't know if it's just going to continue to get worse, or I don't know. I feel desperate. I feel like I'm losing sleep. I feel like I can't concentrate. I'm just at the point where I feel like, do I need to sell my house? Do I need to rent something out and figure something out? I'm just not in a position where I can do that. But I'm also at a point where, like, if you guys can't help me, if nobody can help me, I can't stay in this house. I just can't do it anymore.
Okay, and you have to go back, obviously. I'll try to get a hold of some key members of my team. One, you've met, Alexis. And then a person that you may or may not have heard about is my clairvoyant friend, Sarah. I think for this particular case, because of the oppressive nature of the feelings you're getting, mm-hmm. and also just the fact that you fled your house and you have children, makes me feel like this is something that we will probably need to prioritize. So I promise I'm going to try to get there as soon as I can. I don't know if we'll make it there before you go back to the house, because I think you said you might be returning soon.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you have one son as a teenager, and your mm-hmm. daughter is how old?
7.
Okay. Well, just as a baseline for like knowing what our group, when we founded our group before I had the podcast, Alexis and I, our first priority was to help people that were in need. And if children are involved, that we would help immediately. So just know that when I get word to Alexis and my other team member, Sarah, that I'm positive this is going to be prioritized. So we'll be there as soon as we can. I don't know if we can help, but we'll do our best. That's what we try to do. And if we can't help you, we'll try to find someone who can. That's what I can promise.
I really appreciate that.
Following this initial check-in with Luna, I began working to find a time that the team could investigate her home. COVID cases were, at the time, really high, and the city was urging everyone to take serious precautions due to the overcrowding of hospitals. Typically, on the show, I like to do a preliminary visit with Alexis and gather in-depth testimony, have the homeowner show us specific areas in which activity is common, and explore the space to potentially rule out things that could be rationally explained. But due to the pandemic, I had to modify our approach in this case. So in this series, and many series that you'll hear this season, we had to do a lot of phone call interviews that slightly changed the dynamic of the show. Those familiar with our campfire episodes, you'll notice that this episode and some of the other beginnings of cases you'll hear this season will sound a lot like that, and I just wanted to give you Night Owls a heads up on that. But the next step in this particular case, I needed to conduct a full interview with Luna regarding her experiences. I set up a time to hear how things were going now that she'd moved back into the house, and instructed her to go over a full history of her time in this residence and include as many paranormal experiences that she could recall. What followed was a 2-hour phone call with Luna detailing her 7-year history in this home that she believed was harboring something much more sinister than memories from its past.
So So from the beginning, I'll start with how I ended up in the house. Back in 2013, I was diagnosed with cancer a second time. So it was a little crazy for me. And I was renting and I thought I was going to have surgery and have all of it removed and things like that. But it turned out that I miraculously had fallen pregnant during that time. So I spent all of 2013 just kind of touch and go with my doctors if I was going to live, if the baby was going to live. And, you know, it was a very stressful time. And so my father wanted to buy me a house because I just kept getting sick. And he just said, you know, you need a house. You can't ever work and this, that, and the other because you're always sick. Let me do something nice for you and the kids. And so we had attempted a couple of times to try to close on the house and it just wasn't happening. And then the baby was born and I really didn't want to be moving around that time. But then my realtor contacted me. He said, hey, this house just popped up. And I looked at it online and I fell in love with it immediately. And I said, yes, I want to go. And so we sped to the house and we made it before another couple did. And so we were able to see it first. And I went in. It was older, built in 1925. It was beautiful. It had bay window, just and checking all the boxes. And so and we got it pretty quickly, and it was just kind of like a dream come true. And so when I first moved in, I was so excited about the house that I didn't really want to acknowledge any weird feelings I was having in it. But the first few weeks that I was in it by myself with just my daughter, I didn't have many experiences other than just a feeling, a weighted feeling, like a heavy feeling. And I just chalked it up to being alone and the house was old and it was dark and it was just me and my baby. So I continued to paint and get things settled in. Things seemed okay. And I had, I think it was my mother, she came over. She and my younger sister came to visit me and stayed a night with us. And they said they had heard something or they saw something and they felt really uncomfortable. And I laughed and, you know, we just kind of joked about it. And there was nothing said beyond that. And my son was the one who started having, well, being more verbal about encounters and actually started experiencing things more than I was. And my boyfriend at the time, he doesn't believe in anything like that. So I was very uncomfortable to express it to him. And so it came to a point where my son was coming to me so much about it that he and I would just talk about it. There was one, I don't want to say a renovation, but a change I made to my bedroom that was pretty significant. I pulled up the carpet and I started laying down a wood floor by myself. And I had like little makeshift tools that I had created myself to make the process easier. And they were all out of steel and, you know, hard, heavy metal. I had my bed in the bedroom, but I had it pushed to the side of the room that wasn't finished. And I had laid all my tools down. My daughter and I were asleep in bed. I had, at the time, had three dogs and my cat in bed with me, and my bed was on the floor. I was laying there and the lights were off, but I was totally awake. It sounded like someone had picked up all my tools and just threw them back on the ground in the corner of the room where they were. It was so loud. My dogs jumped. My dog started growling. It startled me. And my knee-jerk reaction was to just look at the doorway. And when I did, I saw what looked to be two figures bolting out of my bathroom. The best way I can describe it is that they were in tandem. They were together. And one was kind of floating, and it looked like if it was wearing something, that it was like a fabric that was tattered at the bottom. And then below it was this doggish beast-looking thing. The best description I have is, if anybody's ever seen that movie Willow, and the queen has these like rat dogs that she sticks on, you know, the main characters, it looked kind of like that. But at the same time, it was like there was an absence of light, like they were black, but they didn't reflect any sort of light or anything. It was just like pitch black, but they were there. And they moved at a speed out of my bathroom, which was adjacent to the area that I heard the noise in my room. So quickly, it was like they were not even aware of the structure, the physical structure around them, that there were walls and there was a hallway and a door. And that was my first real experience that was terrifying and unexplainable, entirely unexplainable. And I had my animals there to validate my reaction. I had a later experience a couple years later. I was very sick, but I wasn't telling anybody. I had just graduated from culinary school and I landed the job of my dreams. I was doing really well. I was working really hard. I was in a lot of pain, but I was in denial about it. And I remember I had worked, basically I was the early morning bake. So I would wake up at 3 a.m. and go to work for 12 hours, sometimes 14, come home pretty exhausted. And so I'd go to bed fairly early while everyone was still awake. One night, it must have been around midnight or so, maybe one, my son was still awake with my ex in the living room watching TV. And I kind of woke up and opened my eyes, but I couldn't move my body. And I didn't worry at that moment because I figured I was just so dead tired that I would eventually come to and move and roll out of bed. But I didn't. And then I was wide awake and I couldn't move. And I thought I was dreaming or I wasn't dreaming, but then I realized I wasn't because I could hear the TV and I could hear them laughing in the room next to me. And but I couldn't. I was just struggling to move. And so then as soon as I came to that realization, I saw at the opposite end of my bedroom, across my bed, this thick black smoke just moving up the wall. And I had windows there, so it just completely blacked out the light coming in from the windows. And it started going up the wall up to the ceiling, and I just told myself, this is a dream, it's not happening. But then it started coming up over the ceiling and it started coming down on me, and as soon as it got near me, I felt this intense pressure on my chest, like it was pushing the air out of me. And then I started to panic, and I was just in my mind saying no, and I was calling out to my boyfriend in my head, but I couldn't get the words out. And I felt like this sense of like, not from me, but from whatever it was, that it was laughing, if that makes sense. I don't think it does. But it was pushing down on me and I couldn't breathe. And then I started panicking because I couldn't breathe, and I could feel the tears coming down my face. And I was screaming in my head, help, stop, get. And then as soon as I said, get off of me, get away from me, and I kept saying that over and over in my head, it stopped. It started pulling away, and then all of a sudden I was able to breathe, and I just went, and I started screaming, and I crawled into the dining room, and I must have looked a total wreck when I got to the other room because I was trying to catch my breath, and I couldn't breathe, and I was crying, and they looked at me like I was crazy. And my son said, what happened, Mom? And he ran to me, and my ex was just like, what are you doing? And I was crying. I was like, it tried to kill me. And I just realized what I was saying in the whole situation. I didn't know how to explain it to them. And so I just wept and cried and fell asleep on the couch. And I refused to go back in there. Then after time, that nothing else happened. And so I kind of just put it out of my mind until I got sick again. And this is where it kind of gets a little foggy in terms of change of event, because it seems like there was a 3-year period where so many things happened. It's hard for me to put it in chronological order. But there were incidences that my son had in adjacent to me being affected and independent. But the one where we were together, I had gotten sick again, and I was having starting to have a panic attack. And I had only started having panic attacks here in this house. I started having a lot of excruciating pain. And I've been through a lot of pain. I've been through a lot of medical things. And so I know what I can tolerate and what is out of, like, beyond my control that would frighten me. And so my son came to me and started crying and hugging me. And I heard him saying, get away from me, get away from us. But I was in so much pain, I couldn't really understand what was going on. We got to the hospital, they treated me, and I came home. And the next day or two, he told me that while I was in pain and I was crying, that there was a voice telling him to kill me. And he said he just wanted to bolt out of the house and run into oncoming traffic so that he could stop the voices. And this frightened me when he told me this. My son at the time must have been 10, maybe 11. And in this time period, he had just recently seen a boy die. An electric gate had closed in on him and he passed away. And my son was the only one that was trying to physically help the boy out and had called 911. So he was very affected. And this whole event with me happened afterwards, and he was hearing voices. And so he, you know, we went down a very dark path for a good couple of years with psychiatric stuff with him, trying to figure out what was going on, medical problems with me. And then things sort of leveled out until he had an experience in that same bathroom. My daughter and I were asleep in my bedroom, and you can see the hallway and the light coming from the bathroom from my bedroom. And I woke up around 3 a.m. to this big crash. And I looked up and I saw my son fly out of the bathroom. And I bolted out of bed and went over to him and picked him up. And the wind had been knocked out of him. He was laying on his back. And, you know, I didn't know what to think. I was half asleep. I said, "Well, baby, what's the matter? What's the matter?" And he couldn't breathe. He was like, he could. And then finally, when he caught his breath, he just yelled, "I need a priest." And our background, I grew up Catholic, but by the time I had had my son, I had pretty much kind of strayed away from that whole structure and just never, ever push any sort of religion on my kids. So for him to call out for a priest was odd to me. And so I just hugged him and I asked him what happened and finally calmed him down and laid him in the bed. And by then it had woken up my daughter too. And she wasn't even barely a year yet, maybe around there. And he said that he was sitting on the bathroom or, you know, on the toilet. And all of a sudden he saw this black creature next to him. And he was so terrified. He was just frozen with fear. He couldn't say anything. He couldn't call out to me or anything. And he said that it threw him and he hit the counter, which is what I heard. And it like threw him out of the bathroom. And so that correlated with what I had experienced as well when I heard him and then I saw him flying out. And I asked him what it looked like, if he could describe it. And he said that it had a big round black head and giant odd-shaped green eyes. And he said the body was very skinny. The arms were very, very long, disproportionate to his body. And he was really bothered by his legs. He said his legs bent backwards, not the way our knees bend, but the other way. I didn't know what to think. I was at a loss. I was at my wit's end. I was frustrated because it seemed like these weird events would occur and then it would be nothing for a while. And then things would pick up again. And I contacted a friend. I reached out to a friend and she said, "Oh, I know this woman. I've known her my whole life. She's a medium. She can help you." And I've sought help, through healers and things like that. And things tend to feel okay for a little while and then they come up or new things pop up. And basically this woman said that there were portals on my property and other healers had actually said this too. And I just told her, I said, "I don't know if I should go to a church." I called churches. Nobody really helped me. I've gotten to the point of desperation quite a few times. Beyond those major events, those are probably the most significant things for me. My son and I both experience different types of things, and it's kind of how, you know, it naturally occurs. It's happening to you, you blow it off, you find a reasonable explanation. And then another person says, oh, I saw this. And you say, oh my God, I saw that too. That's what was happening. I had a couple of roommates come in and out over the years, and they don't like it. And they have the same experiences. So the one that's most consistent is a few of us have seen this, I don't even know. It's like a rodent or a critter, like that movie Critters. It's like a big black furry ball, but it's not furry, and it scurries on the floor. And I've seen it enough times to where I've actually moved out of its way subconsciously, didn't think about it. You know, also working in the service industry, you learn how to maneuver around people. So when I saw it coming, I just instinctively moved out of its way, and I was like, oh, sorry. And I turned around, and of course it wasn't my dog. It didn't look like my dog or my cat. I realized that I moved out of the way for something that wasn't there. And later, maybe 2 years later, my new roommate at the time, he pulled me aside and he goes, look, I don't know what you think about paranormal or whatever. He's like, but I had some really crazy thing happen to me, and I just need to tell you because I don't know what to think and I feel like I'm crazy. I said, okay, let me know. And he basically described that little thing. And he says, I see it running in the hallway all the time, like out of my room and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I said, wow. I said, I've experienced that too. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. And he's like, oh shit, you know, I don't want to be in a haunted house. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I said, I didn't tell you anything because I didn't want to scare you away. And I knew you needed a place to stay. And, you know, I figured maybe you wouldn't be affected. And he said, no, I see it all the time. And he has heard a male's voice in my house. The dog likes to bark incessantly at things that aren't there. And my dog was doing that one day. And he was in his bedroom, and he heard my dog barking in the hallway. And he doesn't care about barking, so he didn't say anything to my dog. And then he said he heard a voice say, shut up, like really low and, you know, authoritative. And the dog stopped and ran into his room. And so I had never heard a voice, so that was new for me. And that was his experience. Other things that I see pretty often in the corner of my, mostly in the living room, in the corner of the living room where our television used to be, I would see these, it looked like bugs, like beetles, or it looked like a bunch of, or giant spiders, like scurrying from the lower corner up the walls and out toward the floor, towards me, just like if you were to see an egg sac open and tons of spiders are coming out, but they're not there. And at first I thought maybe it was because of my eyes were fixated on the television and something was messing, you know, I'm getting old, whatever. But it happens when the TV's off. And it still happens after I move the TV. And I just put a large black rock and some salt in that corner and tried to call it a day. I've also seen gray mist that sort of appears in my kitchen and disappears like smoke. I've seen, that's about it, just mists and smokes and those creatures, the figures. I was in my backyard gardening and I felt a cat rub up against my back, like affectionately. And I thought it was my cat. So I turned around to pet him and he wasn't there. There was nothing there. But I knew instinctively it was my cat rubbing against my back, but there was no cat. But I didn't feel anything negative, so I didn't think anything of it. One time I was working in my front yard. I was gardening. I do that a lot. And I saw a woman in like a white gown, but no sleeves, just kind of like not spaghetti strap thicker, but just a white gown and long brown hair. She's very beautiful. I've never seen her, and she looked very out of place because she didn't seem to be acknowledging any of the features around her, like the house or the carport or the fence for that matter. And she just turned. She wasn't paying attention to me or anything that I could see was around her. And she sort of just went in towards my house and into the outside of the house, into the house. And that was a wall. So I kind of thought maybe I was hot and delirious and needed to sit down and take a break. Again, that was not something I felt anything negative from. I mean, it looked like the sun was shining on her. She looked very peaceful, almost angelic. So that was bizarre, and I very much questioned my sanity living here. So forgive me for that.
It was clear to see at this point in our call there were a lot of things happening at Luna's residence. I already had a lot of thoughts racing through my mind. Were these collected experiences the result of one specific source, or could there be multiple things at play here? I leaned toward the latter, but Luna still had a lot more to share with me. Following this short break, she'll continue to recall many more experiences that she and others had in her home, as well as reveal some unique stories she uncovered about the home's past. And finally, she updates me on how things are going currently now that she and her children have moved back in. Stay tuned. If you aren't already a Patreon supporter, please consider joining at patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast. In exchange for a small monthly donation, you gain access to exclusive videos, audio, interviews, behind the scenes, live streams with myself, Sarah, and Alexis, venue walkthroughs, and more. You can support the show and get access to all these exclusive extras for as little as a dollar a month. So please go to patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast and become a Night Owl patron today.
So in my bedroom, one of the other initial experiences I had, I was sleeping in my bedroom and I was with my partner at the time. My daughter was sleeping between us and I woke up to one of her toys going off, and it was like a farmhouse, plastic farmhouse that if you opened one of the gates, it would make a farm animal noise. And so it went off and it woke me up. I was just frozen because I thought somebody might have broken in the house, and then it did it again, but it was like another farm animal noise. And then I woke up my boyfriend. I was like, can you just go through the house? I'm terrified. He went through the house and he's like, you're crazy. Just go back to sleep. But I was scared. So the next morning I went into the room and I got the toy, and I thought, oh, well, maybe it was just at an angle that the little door would fall open. So I moved. There were two gates on it. The one gate that was loose that would flap open and shut, that wasn't connected to the device that triggered the noise. So then I opened the other gate and it made the noise. And so I closed it again, and then I opened it again and it made another noise. So you had to use a significant amount of force for it to make the noise. You had to open it all the way, it moved, and then you closed it. Whatever moved this, it had to open it, close it. Because when I saw the toy, both the gates were closed. So that's when I knew. I was like, okay, I'm not crazy, because I know I heard that. I didn't want to forget that was significant to me, because in my mind, for something to have forcibly opened a solid physical structure like that without touching it is beyond explanation for me. I've had friends actually come over and say, there's a little old man in your kitchen. I've never seen him. I've felt a presence. The closest thing I've seen to a man in my house that wasn't there, it was actually recently, the last couple of months. I was working in my studio and I thought my son had come into my bedroom. And I can see all of my bedroom from my studio where the desk is. And I saw somebody come into my bedroom, look in the back room where I was, and then walk back out of the bedroom. But it was, first I thought I saw my son. And I called out to him, and he didn't answer. So I got up and I went to the doorway, and no one was there. So I walked to my son's bedroom. I said, did you come in my bedroom? And he said, no, I've been on the computer. I said, okay, I thought I saw you, because I saw his hand and his jacket. And that was when I realized, oh, wait, he's not wearing a jacket. He's in a T-shirt and his pajama pants. And I clearly saw a hand, but it was like a blazer. And it was just like they had just peeked their head in to see who was in the back room or what I was doing, and then decided that was it, and they walked back out. And that's the closest I've ever had an experience or encounter with the little old man, other than seeing a mist in my kitchen and thinking, oh, maybe that was him. Because a lot of people will tell me that my kitchen feels weird to them. Not that they don't like it in there, but that they just don't feel like, they feel like they're sharing the space with someone else. That same friend that actually saw him, she said he would peek his head behind one of the posts. She said, I don't see, he doesn't, she said, he just watches me and makes me uncomfortable. And she stayed one night in my house, in my son's room, and she said, I love you, but never again do I want to stay in your house because I don't feel comfortable. And my other roommate, not the one that saw the black thing, a different roommate I had, he said he always felt very uncomfortable with the closet. And that's my son's room now, and he says the same thing. And I believe them because it used to be my bedroom when I first moved into the house, and I hated the closet. I kept a curtain over it. I didn't like it. But I just thought maybe, oh, it's a closet and closets are scary. But I don't like it. Nobody else does. I do now remember twice. My son came to me asking me to look at his arm and his back, but at different times. And he said, I feel like something just scratched me in the bathroom. And it always happens when he's in that bathroom, in the tub or on the toilet or picking at his face. Who knows? So at that time, I just didn't want to acknowledge it. I was like, it's nothing. You know, I was in denial, and I picked up his shirt and he had 4 scratch marks. And then on his arm, he had 3. So I didn't do anything about it, and I feel terrible. But I think I was just so, you know, so engulfed in school and work and my other job and trying not to be sick all the time and, you know, all the moving parts with both my kids. I said, you know, just burn some sage and tell it to go away and it'll leave you alone. And now that I'm verbalizing it and thinking about it, I feel terrible for not just doing something then. But he just seemed so brave, and I guess I shouldn't have relied so much on that because it's only gotten worse. I mean, I've had the psychics that I've reached out to. I don't know if they're as gifted as they say, but they've all collectively mentioned portals. One, she said, she claimed that she closed it, but I saw someone again after my son's bathroom experience, and she said, oh, well, you know, it was closed, but, you know, its energy is like water and it has to go somewhere else. And if she doesn't make sure that your property is entirely sealed off, that energy will just find another way. And so she claimed to have helped me block everything off, but she was also one of those spiritual folks that believes that there are no negative energies or entities, that everything is of the light and there's no such thing as evil. And I just, as much as I would love to subscribe to that philosophy, it's not. Terrible things happen, war happens, and I've had experiences with the things throughout my life to where I just can't quite be convinced that that's the case. I've had a couple of those folks that attempted to help me also tell me that things attach themselves to me, and that they're usually, the things that are attached, that like to attach to me, are not, probably were never human, that they're very old, that they just feed off of me. I can't see that or experience that other than what I feel. And so I don't know if that's true. I just know what people have told me since I moved into this house. When I was looking for this house, I explicitly expressed to my realtor, I said, I do not want a house where there was an accidental death, suicide. I want a clean slate. I don't want to deal with stuff like that. Because I had the house I had stayed in prior that I was renting out, I would have experiences there, but it never felt bad. Like, I never felt terrible in that house. I just, sometimes I didn't feel like I was by myself. And I found out later that the old couple that had lived there had passed away there. So I just didn't want to deal with that. I wanted to have my own space. Didn't want to share it with anyone. And he looked online. He's like, no, this property is squeaky clean from the records I can access. I said, okay, cool. The old man that had lived there had passed away at the hospital of natural causes. So I was working again in my yard, and this man kept staring at me. And of course, growing up in the ghetto in Houston, I was like, is he casing my house? What's he looking over here for? And he walks over and he goes, hey, do you live here? And I said, why? Who are you? And he said, I'm sorry, I sold you the house. So I said, oh, okay. It's good to put a face to a name. He said, yeah. So how are you enjoying the house? And I said, oh, it's great. I love this house. You know, I love my yard. And he goes, yeah, it looks beautiful. And he goes, so, but really, what is it like living with all those ghosts in there? And I kind of laughed. And at that point, most of the occurrences I've explained had come to pass. And I said, it's been interesting. What makes you say that? Why would you say that? And he said, oh, well, you know, when I had hired some contractors to work on the house, they all abandoned the job. I said, what do you mean? He said, exactly what I said. He said, they called me and they said they were not going back to that house and that I could have their tools. And twice, one was, they were contractors for different things. I think cabinetry. And then another guy was in there. He was putting up sheetrock and some other stuff, but they were different groups. And he said, sure enough, he came to the house and all of their things, they left their stereo, they left their tools, they left their lunch. I mean, they didn't want to come back for any reason. And so he said he had to pick up two jobs twice that they had abandoned. And he said they didn't want payment either, so I just did it myself. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. He said, but they didn't bother me. I thought it was really cool. Like, he thought it was a novelty. And I said, well, I said, I guess I could understand how somebody would do that, but I also, you know, this is my house, you know. And he said, yeah. He goes, well, interestingly enough, I was at a party a couple years ago, and I was talking, you know, we were talking about work, and a woman knew about that property, and she was asking me about it, and I told her what I knew about it. I don't know how he came. He just came into a lot of property over time here in Austin. And she had said in passing, oh, that's so crazy. It used to be a funeral home. And he didn't know that. At least he said he didn't know it. And he said, oh, really? And she said, oh, don't you know? And so apparently the house was built somewhere else, I imagine in Austin. And it was previously a funeral home. And it was built in 1925. And it was moved here roughly 20 years later and was changed into just a home to live in. The kitchen and certain parts of it, you could tell it was updated to have that, whereas the layout is it's not conducive to having a kitchen. It's just not very livable in that way. You would have to extend the house to do that. And so it did answer some questions for me. And the living room has these gorgeous bay windows. And I mean, it turns out that's where they would, I assume, put the caskets for viewing. And the dining room has these fantastic pocket doors, but they're only adjacent to the living room. So that also explains some things. And another day, I was again working my yard, and a woman came to hand me some brochures about the neighborhood because she had grown up here and they're trying to prevent gentrification and was wondering if I could come to some of the meetings. And I said, oh, absolutely, of course. And she asked me about the house. She said, you know, how do you like living in that house? And I just started laughing. I said, you too? And she said, well, I grew up in the house right next door. She grew up in the house next to me, but like one house over. And she said when she lived here, there were only a few other houses here on the property in the this neighborhood where the street is. Everything was just a field. And my house isn't there. So she was a little girl when they moved my house to this property. And that was in the 50s. And she said she became good friends with the woman that lived here. And her husband was always, he was a truck driver, so he was always gone. And she had suffered quite a number of miscarriages. It's very isolated, always lonely and wanting to hang out. And she's a very sad person. But she eventually did have a kid or two. And I think she passed away naturally in the hospital. And then the man that lived here that passed away before I moved in, that was her husband. So the woman that grew up near me, she said she never saw things, but she didn't like going out into the field to feed her horses and care for her horses. When there were horses over here, she had them. She said she didn't like going out to be there with them because it made her very uneasy. And that was around the area where my house is now. And she said that her siblings and other kids in that area, that the only few people that did live out there, they would always talk about what they thought were the slaves, is what they said. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, they would always say that they saw dark figures in chains. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. And I said, oh, man. And so I wanted to do more research in the area, but I couldn't find anything of actual slaves. I did some research that freedmen were here and Montopolis was established about 10 years before Austin proper, and it was a major contender to be city center, but it sort of just, you know, was forgotten. And then basically the economic, and I don't like to say racial minorities because I don't believe them to be minorities, but, you know, people of color, brown and black, and they all lived here, Native Americans, they all lived here and were pushed out. And so I know that that couldn't have had a positive effect. And I haven't personally had many experiences with seeing those figures, except for once my neighborhood, when it's New Year's or 4th of July, they go all out. I don't have to go anywhere to see fireworks. All I have to do is step outside of my house. And I have them surrounding the entire, like I got a 360 view of gargantuan fireworks. So 2 years ago, I took my daughter out on New Year's Eve and we stood in the street and we watched the fireworks and I saw a dark figure walking towards us, but it's like they weren't paying attention to the scenery. It was like they were just walking. They had a very dejected demeanor, like they were sort of hunched over, almost like you, if you were to walk up a very steep hill and you're kind of like hunched over, that's how they were. But I couldn't discern any features or clothing. It was just dark, but it was very clearly a silhouette of a human being. I of course didn't say anything to my daughter. I didn't want to freak her out, and I didn't feel a bad feeling towards me from it. It was just like a passerby. So I just thought, okay, well, I saw that. And that was it. I don't like going to the kitchen. I tuff it up. You know, I go in there anyway, and I turn off the lights and make sure everything's locked. But I feel like I'm being watched constantly. I don't like going into that bathroom. Most of the time that I was sick was when that main bathroom was my bathroom. But once I moved bedrooms, I used a different bathroom. And I don't really get sick like that in there the way I did in the middle bathroom. I always keep the door closed. I cannot stand for it to be open. I burn sage, you know, everywhere. And sometimes After that, I blessed the house. I salt it in the best way that I understand how. And it'll be okay for a while. And then after a month or two, it picks up. And just recently, we've been having to do it every day to almost just to feel better, like a security blanket, but it doesn't change. Everything still feels the way it does. It feels really heavy. People have told me that it feels like someone's in the bathroom when they're not. I don't like the cabinets. Sometimes when I go in there to close the door, I see that all the cabinets are open and my son wasn't in them. My daughter wasn't in them. I wasn't in them. So I'll close them and I'll shut the door. I don't like to have my bedroom door open for that reason because it's right next to that bathroom. But my cat wants to come in and out of my bedroom, so I have to keep it cracked for him. But I feel like something's always there watching me. My animals don't want to come into my back room where my art studio is. My dogs will seldom come into my bedroom, but if they do follow me into those rooms, they are on top of me. Like, they do not want to be, they don't roam in those areas freely. They want to be near me all the time.
At this point, I asked Luna if she could describe some of the recent activity that led her to flee the home with her children and stay at a hotel and later a friend's house.
The night that happened, and I had basically just kind of was fed up with everything, I was having these bizarre sensations on the top of my head. And this is probably within the last 3 weeks. Like someone's grabbing the top of my head. Not my hair, just like pushing down on my skull. Like if you were to wear a big bulky set of headphones and you were wearing them for too long and they kind of like make the top of your head achy. It felt like that, but it would just come out of nowhere. And there were a couple of times I thought my son was pushing down on my head. I thought he had come behind me while I was working and pushed down on my head. And I swatted at his hand and he wasn't there. And I looked behind me and he wasn't there. But I can feel the sensation on my hair follicles and it causes headaches and fatigue and dizziness and confusion. And I've just been experiencing that so much to where it's hard for me to ignore it. I take all of my allergy medicine. I know when it's allergies. I know when it's not. And so that night in particular, I was feeling those sensations on my head, having horrendous migraine. I was trying to push through it because I had a deadline. My knees and my joints were entirely inflamed from my autoimmune disease, which has progressed into RA, and my stomach was in knots, and I was having palpitations, and I didn't know what else to do but to just be like, God, please, you know, and I just started praying, and it was when I started praying that I actually felt more physical pain, but then at that point, it was in my spine, and it was so debilitating. My son had to help me to the bed, and he said, what happened? I was like, I don't know. I just started feeling all the horrible things I ever feel at any given time all at once. And I was just saying, God, please, I don't want to feel like this anymore. And it got worse. And I was just almost in tears. And he's like, it's okay. And I was like, can you rub my feet just a little bit? And he said, okay. And so he started rubbing my feet and he stopped and he said, ow. You know, I said, what? You know, I said, you can stop if your hand is starting to hurt. And he goes, no, it's burning me. I just felt a shooting, burning sensation all up my hands into my torso, and it feels like someone's clawing me from the inside out. And I was like, what the hell? And he was like, let's go. And so I said, okay. I just picked up everything and took the kids to a restaurant and called a friend of mine and told her what was going on. Cause she's like one of the only people I know that won't think I'm crazy. And she was very kind. She said, just go to this hotel. I've already booked your room. But I had to leave my dogs. And so I didn't want that to be an extended thing. So I eventually did come back and get my dogs. And I stayed at a friend's house until I couldn't stay there anymore. And so I emailed my father. He was in Afghanistan. And I told him I couldn't stay in the house anymore. Didn't hear from him in a few days. And then he called. And I answered. And I heard birds singing. And he goes, well, I guess I'll drive up now. I wanted to surprise you. And I said, are you not in Afghanistan? There's birds singing. You can't drive. He said, yeah, I'm in Houston. I wanted to surprise you for Mother's Day. And I just started crying, and I was like, please help me. And so he came, and I mean, he's not a man of the cloth or anything like that, but he's very Christian. He's very Catholic. So he came in, and he went through the house, and I just sat outside, and I meditated, and I just tried to close my eyes and envision him surrounded by light and protection, and to like imagine him driving out whatever's in my house away for good. And then we both were very exhausted after that, and so we went back to the house we were all staying with my animals too. And the next day we got up and we did it again, but both of us went in the house and I burned all sorts of herbs, and we put salt everywhere and just tried to bless it and sage it. And when we came back the next day to clean everything, we're still in the process of cleaning it. It feels better in some ways, like lighter, but it's not entirely gone. And so I joked, and maybe it wasn't a good joke, not to diminish actual PTSD, but I told my son, I was like, I feel like I'm on edge. And he said, me too. And I said, maybe it's just PTSD from the house. And he was like, yeah, totally. And I said, let's just be optimistic. Dad's in a good mood. Baby's in a good mood. Well, she's not a baby anymore. She's 7. Like, you know, she's in a good mood. We'll be good. Okay, Mom. Okay. So I went to bed. He went to bed. I woke up, and we decided to get rid of that middle bathroom where we all feel a terrible feeling. I've had people tell me that something hides in there. But I never know what to believe when people say they have impressions of my house or experiences of my house. I only know what I experience and what correlates with others. I know I have a bad feeling and I don't like that cabinet, but I've never experienced anything in the cabinet. So I can't say either or. Just that the doors are open wide many times when no one's been in there. So we just decided we all have a bad feeling from the hallway and the cabinet. So we were going to get rid of that bathroom. So I was in the kitchen this morning making my tea and my toast, and I was looking at the wall, and I was just running through in my head, okay, so we'll have to move the refrigerator and the stove. We have the gas line and the water line, and we have to remove the tile, and how do I want to move the shiplap? And I was just going through all of that, trying to envision it. And I got really intense pain in my stomach, really, really bad. And I haven't had that pain since I left the house at all. And I just said out loud, I said, get off of me now, leave me alone. And I just said it over and over again. And I felt this bizarre tingling sensation on the back of my leg, like my thigh. And then I felt that pain. There's no other word for it, that painful sensation come out of my abdomen, like you would see smoke pull away or water drain from a sink. That was how it felt. And then I fell back to normal. And so I put on like my game face, and I went and checked on my son. I said, hey, how are you feeling? How do you feel today? And he goes, honestly. And I said, just be honest. I won't be upset. If you feel uneasy, I totally get it. And he said, I don't feel like anything's gone. He's like, I'm glad to be home, and I feel safe with everyone here. He said, but I don't want to be near the bathroom, and I don't want to walk in the hallway. And that's true, because I haven't seen him walk through the hallway since we've been back. He's gone in through the living room and through the dining room into the kitchen. And so I said, okay. And he's like, what about you? And I said, well, my stomach started hurting really bad just now in the kitchen. But maybe I'm hungry. And he said, no, Mom. And I said, yeah. I said, you know me. I don't like the door into the bathroom, so I just closed it. And I don't want to be around there. And he was like, can you please call the people? I said, okay, I'll call the people. Because we were really optimistic about my dad being back and helping out. And we thought if we all banded together, we could get rid of this thing. But it's like, we injured it, or it's laying low and it's letting us get comfortable. And then when we're not paying attention, it strikes again. However, my father and my daughter, they both feel totally fine, and they always generally feel pretty good in the house. But the first day that we came to bless the house and I was outside, my dad went in and he came out and went to have dinner. I said, so did you see anything or hear anything? Does it feel better in there? And he said, you know, in the whole time that we've been here, I've never experienced anything that you've experienced or that your son experiences. But he said, I saw it. And I said, what did you see? And he said, I saw this thing, this creature. It's like scurrying. He's like, it looks like an animal, but it's not. And that's when I knew. I said, okay, he's number three to see that. I said, you know, I see that too. Really? I said, yeah. I hadn't told him about the creature. I had just told him about the bugs that I see and the sensations I feel and the sleep paralysis that I experienced. But I've never told him about the creature, because it just, you know, as you can tell in this whole story, and as I'm telling, I'm remembering other things, and there's so much to remember that, you know, I don't think to tell him. And a lot of the times when he comes to visit, I guess I'm so preoccupied with him here that I never think of what's going on. And my sister-in-law, we joke sometimes, because my dad goes to Afghanistan a lot, and we always joke that when he comes back, he brought some, you know, some like stowaway gin or whatever. But it's a joke, but it's not a joke, because sometimes when he comes back, there is a heaviness. And I always just chalk that up to, you know, him coming back from a very war-torn country and seeing things that people shouldn't ever have to experience. And I always just give him his space and his time. And unfortunately, he drinks quite a bit. He's struggled with that all of his life. And so his habit sort of rears its head in a bad way. And there have been times where he's had some moments here. But I don't know what is the cause or what feeds what. It's just sort of, it feels like a bombardment.
Has there been any sounds or smells?
Yes, it comes and goes. And it's been really pronounced probably for the last 2 months. It smells like death, but like old death, like stink and excrement, and I don't know where it's coming from. And sometimes I'm the only one that's fussing about it, because it's so overpowering to me. And like when my mom visits, I'll say, oh, I'm so sorry about the smell. I'm always constantly apologizing to people about the smell. And about 70% of people say, what are you talking about? They don't smell what I'm smelling. And sometimes my son does, or I'll come in, I'll say, I'm sorry about the smell. And they'll be like, I don't smell it. And oddly enough, when we came, after we burned all the herbs and put the salt down, it hadn't been smelling. And my dogs even pooped and peed in the house before I got them. And I didn't stay to clean up. I was like, we'll clean up later. We just got to go now. And so when I came back to clean everything up, you could not really smell their mess very much. And I didn't smell the horrible smell that I normally always smell. And my dad took the toilet out of that bathroom. We're taking everything out of the bathroom. We're stripping it. We don't want to give it any whatever it is that's in there. My friend was calling it the toilet demon. And when he removed the toilet, there was just that big pipe. I was certain that when I walked in there, I would smell that smell so prominently, and I didn't smell anything. And then today, it's starting to, like, in pockets, come back a little bit, but not really. Not to the point where it was, where I used to think it was the rest of the house, and I thought maybe it smelled like the smell from under the house, and it's coming up through the floorboards. We should seal the floorboards. So I would go in my bedroom, and I didn't smell it, and I would close my door. And then I'd open my bedroom door, and boom, right there where the bathroom and the hallway is, that's where it's most prominent. And I'll burn incense, I'll smudge, just because it smells better than that. And then I have like Glade plugins all over the place, but then I can just smell that and the stench.
who all lives in the actual home?
So currently, it's just me and my kids. My dad just came back from Afghanistan a few days ago, not even a week ago. So I believe he's going to be living with us at the moment. But last night I was trying to study for my final, and I was doing the last homework assignment. I was sitting there looking at my computer, and I heard muffled laughter or noise from my son. And I pulled the headphones off, and I looked up to see if he was calling me. And then I could still hear his voice, but it wasn't his voice. But it wasn't a noise of laughing or talking to someone. It was like if someone was being hurt or murdered or raped or something. Like if you were to walk into a house of a serial killer and they're like in the throes of doing what they're doing to their victim, what you would hear before you actually enter the room. Does that make sense? A horrible, horrible feeling of dread and sadness, because it was matching that to my son's voice. And I just remember like shaking my head, and I remember like not saying it out loud, but in my head I was like, fuck you, leave me alone. Like, that was my thought. It makes you feel crazy. Or images when my friend, I was in my bed the night before I left the house. She asked me, she said, you know, if it's something bad, just tell it to reveal itself to you. And I was like, how do you do that? She said, you just say it, just command it. And I've never done that. So I just closed my eyes and I said, you know, show yourself to me, whatever you are, show yourself to me. And of course, nothing was happening. So I just kind of went into a headspace, like when I meditate, it showed me an image. I saw what I would say is a demon or a devil or something. It had pale greenish skin, and it had these two black horns on top of its head, but they were very wide. They weren't very tall. They were just very wide, and they kind of pointed upward. And he had this like black liquid coming out of his eyes, and he was smiling, and he had pointed teeth, and his saliva was black. And I could just see his shoulders and his torso, and he had very pronounced, kind of exaggerated bone structure. But, you know, it was symmetrical, and his body looked proportional and lean. And then the rest was dark from, like, the rib cage down. I couldn't see. And it was standing in my doorway. Like, when I always feel like something's going to come into my room or it's looking, it was standing right there behind the door. The reason why I contact you guys is that all of these things are started sort of just culminating, and they're not going away. Honestly, I prefer to not be in my house right now, but resources, can't do it.
Luna's first interview painted quite a complex picture of this supposed haunting. However, I had a feeling that there were so many things still lurking in the shadows for this case. Something felt strange to me. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous about diving into a new case after such a long hiatus. But we had to try. So I did what I typically do when I'm uneasy about a case. I study what I have and prepare for my next move. I sat and listened to the call over and over again, piecing together clues and bits of information that seemed to connect. I drew up a timeline. And when it was all said and done, I got something I hadn't gotten in a long while. A hunch. Something in my gut told me that Luna's son, Finn, was my next key witness to focus on. But with all the attacks that he faced, and the current demolition of their main bathroom possibly aggravating the spirit or spirits, I felt it may be unsafe to conduct the interview at the source of these attacks. So I scheduled a time for Luna and Finn to visit me at my residence, to dive even deeper into this complicated case. But this time, I was bringing occult specialist Alexis to observe what was about to unfold that night. Join us as this adventure continues next month on Halloween, October 31st, in part 2 of this series. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter on our website, thenightowlpodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Night Owl Podcast, and consider becoming a patron and supporting our show on patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast to stay up to date with our show's news and events. Stay restless out there. I'd like to thank my investigative team, Sarah, Alexis, Franklin, for going on these crazy adventures with me. Nicholas Fair for his talented musical contributions to this show. Jennifer for managing our merch, Patreon, and many other irrational tasks I throw her way. My dad Sam for his incredible historical research. Bo for helping produce this busy indie show. Mikey for his assistance editing this particular episode. Sandra for keeping us all on schedule and on budget. And last but not least, David Dalton of Driftwork Sound for mastering every single episode on the tight turnarounds I give him. Please support their works by visiting our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, and clicking on the About tab. There you can find links to all their individual works and websites. This podcast was mastered by David Dalton of Driftwork Sound. If you're ready to up the production quality of your podcast or music, go to driftworksound.com. That's driftworksound.com. And get your project mixed, mastered, or produced using well-established methods and unconventional techniques. That's driftworksound.com. And remember, your first master is completely free.